Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning health brief. The chief medical officer at for the Northwest region of Northwestern Medicine with us today, Dr. Irfan Hafiz. Doctor, good morning. We've got a couple of hot, sticky days ahead here, so it's a good time to talk about how much water we really need to drink. What's the latest on this?
Sure. Good morning. Yeah. Obviously we want to keep well hydrated, especially on these hot and humid days there. So making sure that you monitor your thirst, drink water accordingly. You know, a good rule of thumb is probably about 8 glasses a day of 8 ounces each is probably good. Now, if you have certain medical conditions, you may need less. So, you know, if you do have conditions, please consult your physician as well.
As we get older, we don't get as thirsty, do we? I remember as a kid, you're always thirsty, aren't you?
Yes. And some of that may be related to amount of physical activity we do. As a kid, we tend to do a little bit more. But, you know, keeping in mind, you know, being mindful of how much water we've had is certainly important there. Also, keeping in the hot days, making sure that we're sweating. Sweating is an important way of regulating our temperature. And if you're not sweating and everyone else is, that may be a sign you're actually dry. So it's something to keep an eye on.
Are energy drinks a good replacement for water or not?
They can be, but in certain situations. But for the vast majority of people, just straight water is perfectly fine, especially for, you know, for maintenance or mild dehydration. Straight water is fine. You do want to keep an eye out for the sports drinks. They do contain, in addition to water, there's some sugars, fructose in there. There's sometimes caffeine, which can actually make you a little more dehydrated. So it's something to keep in mind that they do have extra stuff. Now, if you are doing very strenuous activity or involved in semi-professional sports, certainly I think sports drinks may play a role more in those situations.
Some time ago, Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales, talked about cold water swimming, and that's kind of given some fuel to this this trend. What do we know about the benefits of cold water swimming?
I mean, certainly there are, and people have been doing those that for years. I'll say it's not for me, but there's definitely, I think, some benefits to be had there. It just certainly does, you know, wake up the body, you know, start to get some of the hormones going and circulation going as well. But it does need to be done with caution. You know, certainly something you don't do for the first time by yourself, and definitely have a buddy with you, taking precautions, things like that are necessary there.
I'll stick to walking. Thank you very much. And
yes.
Recently there was a study about how not only walking, but being in green spaces actually can improve our cardiovascular health. Tell us about this.
Yeah, and this is really an extension of a lot of studies that are going on and looking at the environment and the impact on health. And more what we are seeing are having green spaces such as parks and things like that, places to walk, and blue spaces like access to water, waterfronts, and things like that do have health benefits. They do create a place to relax, reduce tension, reduce some of that adrenaline that's there. And that calming effect does seem to have an effect on your cardiovascular health overall. So communities that do have access seem to do much better than those that don't have access. So I think there's a lot more to come on this topic.
A big health headline recently about a disease that affects hundreds of thousands of people here in the United States, lupus. And researchers there at Northwestern Medicine came up with something. And this is apparently the root cause of lupus. Is that right?
Yeah, it does appear that. I mean, in the past, it was always assumed that there may be environmental factors or that this is purely a genetics thing that, you know, if you have it, you're stuck with it. But it does appear that there is some relationship to T-cell regulation. T-cells are one of the cells that components that are part of our immune system. So some, you know, when those get a little bit dysregulated, that can cause lupus as well. So that may open the door for future treatments by modifying that.
And right now, how is lupus treated? And is what we're talking about here, you know, years off still or maybe sooner?
Yeah, it's hard to say how long. I mean, a lot of times these studies, when they come out, they can lead to a quick breakthrough, but need not. Sometimes they're just in medicine. Sometimes there are dead ends. So it can take sometimes a while to see where that goes. And to actually get a drug that's shown to be effective on that can be sometimes daunting and can it's always a tough thing to solve there.
After a break. I'm sorry. Go ahead, doctor. Continue, please.
I was just going to say current treatments, there's quite a variety depending on how severe lupus is. So do consult your physician.
Northwestern Medicine's Dr. Irfan Hafiz talking with us this morning. Let's talk about this new study. Actually, a couple of studies about the risk factors for cancer and how many of these cases can be preventable. What's the latest on this, doctor?
Yeah, I mean, we've known for quite a while that there are a lot of environmental or modifiable factors that affect cancer. And, you know, about 40% of cancers can be prevented with just some lifestyle changes. And smoking is really the big one. And, you know, over the last few decades, we've seen a considerable decline in smoking. And that has really been very helpful. And but there is still quite a few smokers out there. So if there's one thing you can do to reduce your risk of cancer, it is certainly smoking.
Certain cancers are more preventable than others. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure. You know, and just by some of these modifications in lifestyle, and the other one that's rising actually is obesity. And we're seeing a lot more correlation of certain cancers with obesity as well. Also, sunlight exposure. A lot of skin cancers are related to sunlight. So, you know, keeping your sunscreen, we've got some hot days coming up. Reducing that UV exposure is really a key part of something that we can do to reduce that as well.
And diabetes is something that I saw this number. It was really surprising. Worldwide, of approximately 530 million adults who have diabetes, about 98% have the type 2 diabetes. Before we talk about what the cause of this is, first define what type 2 diabetes is.
Sure. So there's obviously a type 1 if there's a type 2. So type 1 was the first one that was discovered, and this is where because of certain genetics, people are unable to produce any insulin whatsoever, and these people tend to be diagnosed with diabetes much earlier in life, in childhood, and so on. The vast majority, however, are type 2, where over time, your body kind of runs out of insulin, or the insulin is just not as effective anymore. And these are people who, in their 30s and 40s, go on to become diabetic. And there tends to be a lot of familial correlation there, where you've got a brother, sister, mother, father that was diabetic. So the vast majority of people are type 2.
And this new research actually pointed to bacterial strains and viruses. What did this study actually tell us that we didn't know before?
Sure. And we know that there's a lot of factors leading to diabetes, and worldwide, you know, some of these, the total number of diabetics is going up, as you mentioned earlier. And so there is this search for, are there things that we can modify or external things that do affect people going on to develop diabetes? And one of them is the gut biome. There's a lot of research going on that, you know, we've known for decades that we have a lot of germs that normally are present in our gut, and these are part of our healthy bacteria there. And initially it was thought that these germs are just there, they don't do anything, but more and more research is pointing out that they do serve a function in our overall health, and that a certain imbalance of that could lead to certain diseases. One of them may be a correlation to type 2 diabetes. So there's more to come on this. But it is believed that there may be some loose correlation there. Doesn't mean that that's the ultimate cure, but it is something that may be another thing that we would need to help control or manage diabetes.
Talking about type 2 diabetes, what role does your family history play in this, and also your age?
Very much so. I mean, as we get older, we know that our body becomes insulin resistant, meaning that we need more and more insulin in order to manage our daily functions of our glucose control. As we age, it gets harder and harder to do. The other thing is obesity. As we tend to gain weight, we become more insulin resistant as well. And some of that obesity could be familial as well. So if you do already have a family disposition, watching your weight is really, really important. So you you don't develop that insulin resistance. And so it's really a key piece, looking at your genetics and looking, keep an eye on your weight.
And sugar, is that the new smoking these days? Sugar seems to be sugar seems to have moved up to culprit number one.
Yeah, more and more. I mean, we, as modern diets have evolved, we've gone more and more towards unprocessed carbohydrates. And our bodies, as we get older, as we said, don't process sugars very well. It's not necessarily that the carbohydrates is the cause of it, but certainly our bodies just can't handle it very well. And so therefore, minimizing and trying to reduce the amount of unprocessed sugars in our diet is really key.
And finally, a lot of people start their day with some mouthwash, but there's some research on this now. Is it not a good idea, or is it just certain kinds of mouthwash that may be bad for your health?
Yeah, so this is an interesting study that came out and really looking at especially alcohol-containing mouthwash, which, you know, the logic behind that was that alcohol could be used in mouthwash to sterilize the mouth and kill germs there. But as we were talking about that, you know, there's more and more research around their bacteria may play a healthy role in our bodies as well. Now, certainly bacteria in the mouth can cause gingival disease, gum disease, and that's something definitely we need to prevent and manage through brushing and flossing and so on. But this study is really looking at that, does mouthwash actually increase the risk of certain infections? In fact, the study was actually designed to see if it could prevent certain infections, and they actually found the opposite, that certain infections were actually slightly increased. So I think the conclusion of the study was maybe to moderate the amount of alcohol-containing mouthwashes that people use, especially on a daily basis, unless your dentist has recommended it, probably keep that to a less frequency.
Yeah, there's a lot of alcohol-free mouthwash on the market, too. So
exactly.
We can go with that. Dr. Irfan Hafiz, Northwestern Medicine, thank you. Have a good day, sir.
Thank you.